The presenting sponsor of Moon Tower Soccer is FVF Law.
To find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm, you can visit FVF.law.
Hello, friends, and welcome to Swoon Tower Soccer. I'm your host, Mike Crignola.
And I'm Steph Crignola.
And we are all about the boys.
All about the boys and the dogs.
And all sorts of things.
We're about the boys. We're about their moods. We're about their outfits. We're about their social media presence.
Yeah, we're about the ref lockout being over.
Let's go.
Let's go. Very excited because there is a bunch of Austin FC drip that I cannot wait to purchase and look good in. But here we go. Steph, this week we are going to start the show off with the Swoon Tower opponent preview. We were so lucky to get Steve Davis on the call with us to talk about our neighbors to the north. All right. Today, we are joined by Steve Davis. Steve Davis writes the Texas 11 Substack. That's texasxi.substack.com. He is the FC Dallas broadcast analyst, and he's also a nonprofit director at goalpleasantgrove.com. Steve, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
All good, guys. Appreciate you asking me on.
Yeah, we were looking through the FC Dallas media roster, you know, and one of the things that jumped out is that you're a dog lover. Here on Swoon Tower Soccer, we are gigantic dog fans, so that puts you at the top of our list.
Kimu, come here. Come here.
You got a special dog appearance.
Kimu, speak. 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 There you go.
Yeah, there it is. So, Steve, something you might not know about Swoon Tower is every week that we have a home match here in Austin, Austin Pets Alive does an adoptable dog of the match. And so we interview that dog for our audio only podcast. Your dog is not the first and will not be the last dog on this show.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. We love dogs. It's just can't get away from your brand, right? But we're really excited to have you here. Thank you. We're really excited to have you here to talk about our upcoming match, if you're all listening to this on Friday when it's released, tomorrow. So we look forward to having this chat, just kind of getting a little bit of insight on your inside experience with FC Dallas, maybe versus some of the national coverage. So just starting right there, we see from that national view that Dallas has a strong academy that, unfortunately or fortunately, keep selling players. We've got a lot of like depth of historical importance in FCD. We see them play possession style. We see their history and their legacy with their academy players. So how does some of that translate inside the club versus that national view?
Well, it's interesting, guys, that you say, fortunately or unfortunately. I guess there are some different ways to look at it, but I think it's I think it's amazing. I think it's great. I think it's the way that the league should work. I think it's the way the developmental system in this country should work. If there aren't academies producing top end talent, then there aren't players like let's just look at Dallas. Then there isn't a Weston McKennie going into another level into Europe. There isn't Ricardo Pepi going into another level in Europe. Tanner Tessman, you go on. Chris Richards came through the Dallas Developmental Academy. So those players go on. Sometimes they immediately go to a higher level, to the highest level. They all can't be on the Alphonso Davies track, but sometimes, a guy like Chris Richards goes into the Bayern system, plays in the Bayern reserves, and then he moves around a little bit. And now Chris Richards is a member, of course, of Crystal Palace in the Premier League, maybe the best league, probably the best league in the world. So I don't see that as any kind of a bad thing. There's something to be said for you'd like for some of these guys to maybe contribute something to the club on their way out. You look at a guy like, you look at Weston McKennie or a guy like Chris Richards. They left before they ever played a professional game. But then you look at a Brian Reynolds who had a good season or season and a half before he went on to Europe, or Ricardo Pepi, who I'm sorry to say, came down one of the matches, and then he and Jesus Ferreira sort of did a number on Austin, one of Lucha Gonzalez's last games. That was a 5-2 or 5-3 shootout back in 2021.
Oh, we
So,
remember.
For a
I know,
long
I know.
time, for a long time, Ricardo Pepi was the leading scorer in Q2 Stadium. So
Right.
it'll be a long
Did
time before we forget
did
him.
score a couple of important national team goals.
For sure.
What was that? Jamaica there at Q2 and about two falls ago. So
Yeah, we'll take
anyway,
all of those.
so and then you mentioned you had a lot in that question, Steph, Stephanie, but I hope hopefully that answered some of those questions at least.
No, I think it's cool to get that insight because you see this Academy legacy, and I feel like there has to be some bit of, ooh, I really wish they just like were able to contribute to the first team like a little bit before they go. And you know, having those players cycle through without doing a little stop on the first team before they go is such an important thing. But I don't know if it translates to a lot of folks who are at just that like baseline MLS level. They don't have that understanding or that knowledge that FCD Academy is cranking out all of these absolute superstars. So that's kind of where the unfortunately came in of like, is it for just like straightforward MLS viewers? Don't you wish there was like a little bit more hype for FCD? And I don't know if that clearly like the legacy for y'all is enough to keep you going. So I think that's a really great attitude to have personally. I just wasn't sure.
No, I think no, it's a really good point, but I think what happens, Austin started their professional soccer journey, at least in Major League Soccer. I know there's professional soccer there before. They started their MLS journey a little bit later, but I think what happens is as you move the timeline along, fans sort of start to understand that it's not just contributing to the first team that can create points of pride. Weston McKennie never played a professional game for FC Dallas, but you better damn sure believe that when Weston McKennie, is out there CONCACAFing it up, sort of being that quiet, sort of sneaky instigator against Mexico, there is a point of pride for FC Dallas fans because they understand, hey, that kid's got Texas in him. He grew up around here. He came through the FC Dallas Academy, and it's going to be the same thing with Austin. In a few years, as the academy gets going and produces more talent, some players like a Paxton Pomykal in Dallas are going to funnel into the first team and be big contributors. Jesus Ferreira, who knows if he'll go to Europe or not? Maybe he wants to, maybe he doesn't. But as of now, I mean, he's like the third all-time leading scorer already, maybe fourth, something like that, for FC Dallas. So you're going to get those points of pride. But even the guys that don't necessarily make a big contribution, he's still he's going to come back one day during the summer, and he's going to be around the team, and he's going to be somebody that everybody recognizes as coming through your academy. And then when he goes over there and plays, on Saturday mornings, your fans there are going to get on the boards and say, hey, don't forget so and so is playing, at 9 o'clock this morning on ESPN2. So it can work. It can really bo work both ways.
Yeah, I really love that attitude. That's, I think, great.
You started to talk a little bit about players that are currently at FC Dallas right now, and I would love to dig into that a little bit because it feels like in the off season, right, there were a lot of additions to the team, and certainly down here in 35, south of y'all, I was pretty nervous about what this team was going to look like this year, as competition for Copa Tejas. For you, who are the most important players on the team this year?
So you start with a guy like Jesus Ferreira, we just talked about a little bit. But, he's a guy that has, I mean, heck, he started a U.S. national team World Cup elimination game, when they played the Netherlands. Jesus is interesting this year because he was so good toward the front end of last year, then he sort of tailed off, and I think he lost some confidence. And then he comes into preseason ready to go, immediately hurts himself in a really early preseason match against Lionel Messi in Miami. Doesn't really have a preseason. Now he's back, but so far he hasn't really found his feet. So still a really important player, but just hasn't really gotten himself going. Still an important player. The other guys,
Can we talk about Jesus real quick? Because
yeah,
I
of course.
know
It's your show, man. You talk about whatever you want.
so I know he's been kind of played a lot in a lot of different positions up and down the attacking band. Sometimes as that number 10, sometimes as the lone striker, sometimes paired up with another guy. Where is he playing for FCD right now? And in your opinion, where should he be playing?
Well, it's a good question because as you talk about Jesus Ferreira, what happens is it becomes an academic discussion about where a player with his particular skill set is best utilized. The real life discussion sort of more revolves around a lot of different things, man. There's a lot more nuance to that discussion because it revolves around is Jesus confident? Who is playing around him? What is the game state? What does the match look like? Because Jesus tends to freelance a lot. It's the competitive nature of him. So what happens is that let's say he starts as the high striker. Last year, FC Dallas played 4-3-3. He's the high striker, but he wants to drop in. He wants to drop in and play as more of a false nine. Well, FC Dallas play 4-3-3. I don't know that in their system they really had a false nine, but he's going to do it anyway because that's just his inclination as a player. Now, if Dallas is struggling in the build out, what's going to happen? Jesus is going to drop further back. So now he's going to now let's say Dallas is building with what they call 4-2. That means four in the back. Outside backs go a little high, center backs behind them, two midfielders. Well, if Dallas is struggling to build out in 4-2, then he's going to drop in. He wants to be the extra midfielder there. So it's going to be building out of 4-3. So now he's there. Later on, if Dallas is having a little trouble finding Jesus, he gets frustrated. Maybe they need a goal. So now he wants to stay high, but what he likes to do now is drift wide and play make from wide areas. So all of this is to say, and it's a very long answer, the TLDR is that he sort of freelances depending on what he thinks the game needs. That's okay, but maybe better is can he fit a little bit more tightly within a system? Because any system will work as long as everybody's pulling in the same direction. Well, now all of a sudden, if Jesus is off, he's a good playmaker from the right side. He is this one great, like from that 20, from about 20, 25 yards out, right side, about that Nick Lima area where he was so good at hitting a ball from there last year for you guys. He hits a great ball from there. So he wants to find that pocket. Well, okay. But if he's supposed to be playing striker, well, he can hit that ball all day, but there's no striker in there, right? So anyway, the point is I think his best position to sort of circle all the way around and answer your question is probably as an off striker. He's probably more like a lot like the way Sebastian Jerussi plays, late arriving runs, play near the striker, but not so much high striker, not so much in the hole as a traditional number 10, but somewhere right in between, a lot like Driussi does, making late runs, finding space between the lines, things like that. So that's probably his best position. Does the you get it now you get into the question of does Nico Esteves, the FC Dallas manager, does he then want to form an entire system around a guy and his strengths and weaknesses, a guy who, by the way, may get sold in the summer. So there's a lot of moving parts to that question. And just to be very honest with you guys, I'm not sure that Nicolas Tevez and his coaching staff have quite solved the riddle just yet.
That relatable.
I hear you. I hear you. I've
Yep.
seen the Austin games this year. I hear you.
Yep. So I guess on top of him, let's get back into some of the other key playmakers that you're keeping an eye on.
Yeah, so Petar Musa, it's Petar, he's Croatian. He was bought this summer, I'm sorry, this winter, $10 million, reported transfer fee. It's a lot of money in FC Dallas box. FC Dallas is not a team that tends to spend a lot that way, so that's big money. coming out of the Portuguese league, where he did score a lot of goals, but mostly off the bench. Having watched him a lot in training, he's a big, strong guy, and he has good feet. But he only has one goal so far, and the chemistry just hasn't developed between he and Ferreira, or between he and really anybody else along the front line. I think you have to give those things a little bit of time, but he's definitely a guy who has to come good this year for FC Dallas. Behind him, Asier Yarramendi. Unfortunately, I don't know if you guys have heard this, but the word early was that he would probably be playing in this match. Doesn't look like he is now. They're targeting, he's missed a couple of games. They're targeting next week now as a return. But Iata has a lot of high level experience from La Liga and in Spain. He plays nominally as a six, so as a holding midfielder. But he's a guy who is very comfortable receiving balls in traffic. Dallas is a possession team, so you've got to have those holding midfielders comfortable, wanting the ball even when things are tight around them, even when pressure's coming 360 degrees. They have to be willing to step into those places and receive the ball in there, and then can play out of it. Very good about breaking lines with passes. He's got this reverse pass, if you know what that is, where you've got your hips sort of turned to the right, and then you hit a ball back to the left. It's sort of soccer's version of a no look. He's got that club in his bag. And then just real quick, the other two people, the key guys you keep your eye on, Nkosi Tefari, and it is Nkosi, not Nikosi, as too many announcers are going to try to tell you. Nkosi Tefari, I think he's, if he's not an elite defender in the league, he's very, very close to it. He just had his first national team call up. In fact, when the team was down in San Antonio, near you guys, and then right behind him, Martin Paes, Dutch goalkeeper. I really think that Martin is one of the best shot stoppers in the league. As he gets into positions outside his six, I think that's where he needs to, work on his game just a little bit, when to managing his penalty area and when to come out into areas outside the 6-yard box, and how aggressive he's very aggressive, how aggressive he wants to be. Maybe sometimes he's a little too aggressive and moving out of those areas, but inside the six, inside the goal area, an elite shot stopper.
Yeah, I was surprised to learn how young Martin is. That he's not quite 26 yet is wild. Like, for how good he is already. We've been pretty blessed here in Austin with Brad Stuver in goal for us. And like, knowing that Martin is 5 years, 6 years younger than Brad makes me a little sad.
But the truth is, guys, I don't know how long Martin is around here. He and his supermodel Instagram famous wife, or girlfriend, I guess, they love Dallas. They really have indoctrinated themselves into Dallas culture. They moved, Frisco is, the stadium's in Frisco out in the suburbs, but they moved downtown right by American Airlines Center, the arena where the Mavericks and the Dallas Stars play. But I know that Martin probably has ambitions to get back into Europe. I think he's great in Major League Soccer. I think he can stay here for as long as he likes. But my feeling is that at some point he'd probably like to, move back into Europe. So you never know how long you guys might have to be dealing with him. Maybe it may be a long time, but it may not be.
I do want to kind of pull out just for a second. Is Nkosi Tefari as rad as we think he is? I
Yeah,
mean,
this
clearly
house
he's a great
loves.
player.
Yeah.
If we could choose any player from any MLS team to like yoink, it would be Nkosi.
Yeah.
So just like as a player, as a personality, as a member of the FCD community, like, is he as cool as it seems like he is?
Okay, first of all, I'm gonna have to look up yoink. It's a verb I haven't heard, but
Yeah,
I don't
it's
think
a
it means
deep
anything dirty, but I think I got the context.
it's a deep cut MLS transfer reference. Like,
Okay, I
it's
like
like GAM but different.
it. Okay, I've been saying, you like some game. Okay, Hey man, and Cozy is a, he's a good dude. I think he's I do think he's just as I said, an elite talent. I think he really took another level last year. But he is an intense fellow. He is and I do not mean that in any pejorative way. But as you get to know people, Martin Paz, for instance, we just talked about him. He's going to come over every time the broadcast crew gets to we watch training on the Friday before, and most journalists don't get to do that. It's sort of an unspoken thing. We get a look at the lineup and things like that, knowing that we're not going to talk about it until the actual game broadcast. But Martin Paz is always going to come over and give us a fist bump, ask how we're doing, whatever. And Kosi's gonna he's gonna go past this. He's gonna give us one of the I know your audience can't see me do it. It's a little head, just a little head bump.
Head nod.
I mean, little head nod. And he's locked in. So that's more him. He's a guy though that on the field last year he started to develop this part of his game, and this year even more so. He's the guy that's going to get into some players. He's going to if they're not in the right place, he's going to tell them that's not where you're supposed to be. And he's the guy that's supposed to that's if a guy isn't marking touch tight, he's going to say that's not good enough. And it honestly, he could probably even do a little bit more of it. And he's got the look, and he's got the aura about him that he so he can be intimidating that way. So yes, absolutely. He's got the style, he's got the swagger. So if along with that, when you marry that with the intensity, now does that up the rad factor or down the rad factor? I don't know,
Personally,
but
for
that's
me, ups the rad. Like seeing that or hearing about that level of like focus and intensity, I think that being able to do both, being able to be a style icon and a personality, and also when it's time to focus, like really locking in there, that's such a cool piece to get to know.
Well, the background there is I think it was 2 years ago, coaches sort of got through to him that he was maybe just being honest. And if he was here, I would say this, and he would probably agree. I think you might have been a little too far aligned to the style side. There it's a cool there's a cool factor to being a professional athlete. Maybe you're not a baseball player making $4 million a year. But being a soccer player, professional soccer player, making 400,000 a year, hey man, that ain't bad, And I think he was enjoying that, and I think they finally got through to him and told him, look, man, you're a good player. You want to be a good player? Great. You're a good player. You're already there. You want to be a great player? You want to be elite in this league? You're gonna have to rebalance a little bit here. A little bit less style. A little bit more digging into what it means to be a professional soccer player. And I think Nkosi embraced that. And it showed last year on the field when he was clearly FC Dallas's best defender, got the national team call up. And I think it just keeps going that direction. So again, maybe that reduces his rad factor in one way, that he's not, as he's not going to identify quite as much as a style icon. Maybe it's not as much about the Instagram. Maybe it's more about being a professional soccer player, but it's just a rebalance, I think. And I think he's done a pretty good job of it.
Staying a little bit zoomed out, what do you think are the keys to success for the team right now, kind of overall?
Well, Mike, that's a good question. I think that answer has probably changed in a month. Because I think coming into the season, everybody looked at the FCD roster and said, "Well, they are missing a couple of players. Alan Velasco, he's a sort of a playmaking, left-sided playmaking winger. He comes inside a lot. He's going to be out for the season, probably out for the entire season." On the right side, Giovanni Jesus, he's a right outside back or right wing back. And everybody thought, okay, well, he's out for most of the season as well. But they still got a good roster, and they got the big striker coming in, Jesus Ferreira. Paxton Pomykal is a very good player. Paxton Pomykal, one of the midfielders, Iatamendi, on and on. Well, now Paxton Pomykal was just announced the other day out for the season. Jesus Ferreira hasn't found his feet yet, and the net out of all that is. Dallas is struggling. Dallas has lost three games in a row. They've only won one because Dante Sealy, a left-sided wing back, Dante Sealy hit a very, very, very late game winner against San Jose in the opener. Otherwise, they would have drawn that one as well. So, you know, you ask what the key is, man. Right now, honestly, the key is just stabilizing the ship, you know, because it's sort of adrift at sea right now. What happened in 2022 and 23? Nicolas Tevez comes in, looks at the team, looks at what he has, and says, "We're going to be a possession team." You know, he came from the Greg Berhalter school. He was with the national team. We're going to be a possession team. We're going to keep the ball a lot. We're going to look to, keep the ball and sort of move the ball around to dislodge defenders and then try to find the gaps from there. But also what he sort of built the team around for those 2 years was we're going to pay a lot of attention to where we are when we have the ball with regard to what if we lose the ball now, what they call rest defense. So he wants, so he's very big about, we need guys, in these, if you divide the field up horizontally into five zones, we've got to have guys in every zone. We've got to pay a lot of attention to where we are in case we lose the ball. Transition defending. Right now, to be honest with you, Austin is having a huge problem with transition defending.
Yeah.
So this is what Dallas concentrated on. We're going to be hard to score against. And then for 2 years, they allow 37 goals in 34 games. That's a really good defensive mark, among the best in the league. You're going to be in a lot of games. So Dallas wins a lot of 2-1 games, some 1-0s, not that many, a lot of 2-1. So they shorten the game. They win close 2-1. They score enough to win a lot of games 2-1. Well, this year that's not happening. They're trying to score more goals. They changed the system. They went from a 4-3-3 team to a 3-4-2-1 team. We can talk about that a little bit if you wanted to, but essentially now they've got they overcorrected, you could say. They tried to in this try to get more shots on goal, more shots on target, more attack, more goals. You can do all that. You can change the system. You can tweak your personnel, but there is a cost, and the cost in this case has been great because they're allowing way too many goals right now. They're allowing two goals a game. If you're allowing two goals a game, you will not make the playoffs. It's just that simple. So the answer to question, the very long answer to question is right now, the key is just stabilize things, get back to being harder to score against, and a lot of that is just paying attention to the nuts and bolts of defending, competing, winning balls, being positionally sound when you do lose the ball, not getting beat in transition, things like that. That's the key right now. It's just stabilizing things.
Yeah.
And then one name I didn't hear mentioned yet in this call, which to me is wild because he was like top of my fantasy team every week last year, Marco Farfan. How is he? Is he going to make an appearance this season? Like, what is going on with Marco?
Marco's a good dude, man. He's a really good dude. No, he's just been hurt, and he's a valuable part of the team. Now the question is, going from a 4-3-3 team where Marco was absolutely 100% the starting left back, that was his position. Nobody was good enough to touch him. Sam Giancola came in last year, but he was a depth piece and ended up playing some different positions. Marco Farfan, for me, is one of the best defensive left backs in Major League Soccer. Now, going forward, he's going to give you something, but he's not elite going forward. But as far as a defensive guy locking down that one side, he's terrific. But he's just been hurt, and the other thing is going to a three back system. Now, is he going to really thrive as a wing back over there? Because he's not an elite offensive player. Maybe he'll do okay. Maybe on the road when you go a little bit more defensive and your three-man back line is really more of a five-man back line. I would anticipate seeing him some there, maybe even this weekend. I'm not sure. But he also, when he was at LAFC before, he played some left center back. So I anticipate that we might see him some there. You will absolutely see Marco. The last time I was at training, it was week before last because they were idle last weekend. I saw Marco on the side, and I said, And he was still running on the side. I said, "Marco, I saw you last week. You said you're going to be out there, not over here with me, not on the side." And not running. You know, you're going to be joining the team. He's like, Steve, I'm dying to, man. So he's back training with the team now, and it sort of surprised me, guys, if you didn't see him at least off the bench this weekend.
Cool. Yeah. Just his presence was always like, okay, cool. That's a clean sheet for me. And so, And then I guess the last question is kind of what is the local narrative around Dallas right now? Around the team, kind of what is the vibe in the stands? What is the vibe from the beat? Like, is their current form, that win and three losses, is that like starting to hit people? Is that, what's it like over there?
Man, you could say it's starting to hit people, or you could say it's been a Conor McGregor level hit to people. Because yeah, man, it's a little from the fans, it's a little grim right now. And as a writer, going all the way back to, I wrote for ESPN and then for SI and then for NBC, and I was sort of proud of myself as a guy who was trying to provide context and nuance and not just be overreaction guy, not be hot take sports guy. And so I am still trying to tell people it's a long season. Major League Soccer's permissive playoff structure allows you to, honestly, you can stink for a little while. And same with
I
Austin.
mean, look at Sporting Kansas City last year, right? Like, they
10
didn't win
games,
until May.
10 games without a win, right? And
So.
they still make the playoffs. So you can absolutely do that. Now, what you want, though, are signs. What you want, and what I wrote on Texas 11 is, it's not a must-win for Dallas to go down to Austin. It's a rivalry game. Austin's going to be up for it. The fans are going to be up for it. They could lose and still walk away feeling like things are moving in the right direction. Now that's a tough needle to thread. So it's better if they can go down there and get a draw. Certainly, if they can get a win. Now you really have something to hang your hat on and feel better about. But mostly, what they need to do is just play better. Not allow silly goals. Create more chances. If they go down there and Brad Stuver absolutely stands on his head, and at the end of the game you see FC Dallas had eight shots on goal and XG of two 2.4 and man, if Brad Stuver wasn't world class in this one, they would have won. But at the end of the day, it's a 1-1 tie or something. If that happens, I think everybody, they get back on the plane feeling like, okay, things are at least heading in the right direction. And I think the fans would say the same thing. So again, these conversations, it's not just win good, loss bad, or anything like that. There is a little bit more nuance to it, and because it is a long season. If they lose 3-2, but Jesus Ferreira comes out with two assists into Peter Musa, who's got two more goals now, everybody says, oh, well, now the chemistry is developed. At least we see the chemistry there. Things just need to move in a good direction.
Can you just take all that and put it in like a little TED talk and put it on YouTube, and then we can just send it out to every team? I just feel like it's such a healthy nuanced take to having a little bit of a loss streak, and obviously some teams are in much longer loss streaks than others, and it's easier to or harder to have that perspective, but I think it's a really nice reminder that it is a long season and that things can turn around, and you want to just look for those positive signals and tease them out when you can.
Oh, that's so cute that you guys think supporters want healthy nuance and things like that.
I know they don't want it. I'm
No,
just saying they need
they do. They do.
it.
No, they want the empty calorie. They want the immediate gratification. They don't want yahoos like me telling them to calm the F down. No, it's so true, and it's really interesting as a media person that. You do feel like people need to know these things, and yet they don't really want it. So I don't know.
Yeah,
I haven't I haven't cracked that code, man.
Threading that needle, right? Of like, you'd give them what they
Yeah,
want, but also like what they need.
yeah, yeah. But indulge him a little too.
I know for us, it's been a little bit hard this year. We haven't quite been healthy in the midfield, and we've been playing some guys out of position because of that, and like that connection from the back line to the front line hasn't really been there, right? We've been making do, and so on our end, honestly, at this point, Steve, what I'm hoping for from Austin FC is that Danny Pereira plays in the six. Like that's it. That's if that happens, I'm gonna be happy.
I get it. No, I've seen the
Watching
games. I get
him,
it.
watching him play up front here for us so far this year has not been what we had hoped for. And so, tactically, I think having that release valve of Danny to dribble out of pressure has been immensely valuable for us. But we haven't had it yet this year, so we'll see.
No, definitely moving the ball out of the back, especially on the right side. It's been not to rub it in, but it's been a little bit of a disaster. So
That was kind of
that
my
was fine.
last that was kind of my last question is who's playing on the left, like the left wing for Dallas? And please tell me it's someone who doesn't want to press.
I don't honestly know. Like tomorrow, usually I'd be going to training, and I would know. I wouldn't be able to tell you, but I would know honestly. Knowing that Dallas had the extra week to train, and I haven't talked to Nico about what he might be doing different tactically, personnel wise. I don't know. I would suspect that a team that's lost 3 games in a row, you're going to see some changes. You can't just kind of keep rolling it back, right? So. If it's Dante Seeley, I can tell you that he loves to, he's a left-sided guy who wants to cut in on his on the right on his right foot. He's not a guy who really loves to get it, dribble down to the end line and get the cross in. He really wants to come inside a lot, try to combine. He loves taking on guys one-on-one. So I can tell you about that. But honestly, if you're right-sided defender. I'm not sure who it's going to be, but if it's Gallagher or whoever it is back there, you guys have really had trouble defending that back post from that side. So Dallas might look at that tactically and say, no, we just need a guy on the left side who's just going to attack the back post, try to create from the right, attack the back post, because that's really been a trouble area for you guys from what I can see. And also build, and you're right, building out of that side. Haider Operon, he's been playing on the right for you guys mostly, I think. And Haider does some good things, but building out isn't one of them. His choices coming out of the back, aren't good. So I think what Orlando did a pretty good job of last time was making you guys, was shading you guys to that side, making you play out of the right side where you weren't as strong. You got Matt Hedges playing on the left. He's a better passer. And Heinz Eike was on the right center back side, and then again with Gallagher and with O'Brien, I think Orlando just said, "Nope, we're just going to make him go to that side, and then nick the ball and get him in transition." And man, it worked. So.
We will certainly be looking to see that that doesn't happen this weekend here at Q2.
Well, that's not
Steve.
your job. That's Josh's job.
No, I mean as fans, right? We will be hoping
We don't want to see what we saw last weekend ever again.
And
I get it.
certainly not at
100%.
home. Certainly not
100%.
at home, I think the
Hey.
fans in our stadium deserve better. And so hopefully the team comes out with a different look as well. 'Cause to your point, can't keep doing the same thing and expecting no change.
Definition of insanity, right? Cool.
Steve, thank you so much for taking the time out of your week to sit with us. I really valued the insight that you have in Dallas as well as Austin. So it's been great to hear your perspective on the team and what we can look forward to tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. I love, by the way, I love that Austin has a team. I'll try not to bust my arm, pat myself on the back here, but for all those years, I was telling everybody that Austin has this counterculture feel, just like Portland. A soccer team would rock there, and everybody would, Steve, it's Longhorn country. They're not gonna, a soccer team won't work here. Pro sports are never gonna work here. Man, whatever. I love that you guys have it. I love that you guys have a team. Q2 is an awesome place, man. I love watching games there. It's got a really, even though it's about the same size as, I've been to most of the MLS stadiums, and it's the same size as most of them, but it has a big feel. It's because of the roof structure, the way that the little some areas of the subroof to keep the sound in. Man, it's got a big feel. I love your games there. So, man, continued good luck down there. I do hope Boston sort of gets it together this year.
Yeah,
Awesome.
us too. And any plug that you want to make for yourself here, now's the time to do it before we sign off.
Ah, man, just if you want to know a little bit more about FC Dallas, it's Substack, Texas 11. The 11, as Stephanie knows now, is XI. It's Roman numeral Texas 11. Otherwise, on Twitter, I'm Steve Davis 90.
Perfect.
Some
Thank
people
you so
can't. Some
much.
people can't figure that out either. It's 90 minutes, 90 minute game. I'm not. I
Is
wasn't
that
born in
90
90.
spelled out in Roman numerals too?
I wouldn't even know how to do that. That goes too high. I was not born in 1990. Some people look at my picture and like, oh, that doesn't add up.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Hopefully we'll connect up next time you're in Austin.
Sounds good, guys. You guys look after yourselves.
It was a really cool conversation to get to have with Steve. So thank you so much to him for coming on and giving us his time. Hopefully y'all are enjoying this segment. I feel like I'm learning a lot, and I am going into our matches with a lot more nuanced understanding of our opponent. So I think it's been really cool for me. We're gonna keep doing it for me. But if you like it too, let us know.
Yeah, one of the things that for me it reminds me of is the fact that like they're also coming in with a plan, right? The other team, the bad guys. And so like sometimes when we don't do what our plan is, maybe it's because the bad guys are doing what their plan is.
Just
So
straight up calling our opponents the bad guys from here on out. Next
yeah,
interview, we'll start with, hey, what does it feel like to be the bad guys?
Yeah, we'll see how that works out.
All right, do you want to get into our regular show? We're covering our matchup with Philadelphia Union and also Orlando. We're not going to talk much about Orlando, so
Why not?
let's get to the Philly match. We started off with an adorable match, Scott. We got to interview Rustin.
Oh, Rustin is incredible.
What a sweet angel. So good at sitting.
Yes. And eating treats.
Yes. I'm also good at those things, for what it's worth.
Unfortunately, same. Let's hear from Rustin now.
All right, Rustin. Hi, how are you? Easy question to start off. We've got a couple others for you.
Yeah, Rustin, I wanted to know, are you more of a front seat or a back seat kind of dog?
Good answer. Okay, Rustin, you are so well trained. I want to know if you have any training tips for the boys on the pitch. Great answer. Okay, Rustin, can we get a listos verde? Thank you.
Boy.
Oh, thank you, Rustin. I'm gonna give him a billion treats.
Yeah, 20,000 belly rubs out of 10. Just so
Perfect.
sweet.
Ugh. That's our match, Scott, segment for this cycle, but I'm gonna tease that we have
Ooh.
something very exciting coming up the next time you hear us. And if you listened to this segment last time, you will have a clue of what that is. I said I wanted something, and we're getting it.
Yeah, Steph has officially bullied the.
That's unfair. I asked nicely.
Yeah. It was a charm offensive.
Yeah.
Speaking of charm offensive, it's time to talk about fit checks. I am very curious about one specific aspect of this week's Fit Check, Stephanie. Because we haven't gotten to talk about it at all, where do you stand on Sebastian Driussi's hair?
Is it like a divisive thing?
I don't know.
Oh, I think it's fine.
I love it.
I'm excited for it to get into a little bun on the top of his head.
Ooh, you
we'll
think
talk
that's,
when we get there.
You think that's where he's going?
I kind of wish it was curlier.
Mm.
You know, like let some of that natural curl come out. I don't know if he has natural curl, but like I think that when I see like longer tops of hair and it's a little curly.
Sure. I kind of want it to become like a full-on pompadour. Like, oh, I want him
like
to
Richard
go...
Like Richard Blaze? You want him to be Richard Blaze?
No. I want him to be like a rockabilly guy. Phil West of the Verde All Day Substack was talking about, like, if Sebastian Driussi wore a leather jacket and, like, cool guy sunglasses, right? And started a rockabilly look.
Okay.
That'd be pretty good.
I have to let you know, I like viscerally reacted to that because every time I hear pompadour, all I can think about is Pompadour, the short-lived Matt Lucas nightmare vehicle? Fuel.
No, I meant, you know, the rockabilly look.
Yeah, but I like when I think of a good pompadour or like
Matt
an
Lucas?
Aggressive. No. That was I took a beat. Rid Matt Lucas from my brain. And then I was thinking about Richard Blaze, who is much more pleasant to think about.
Sure. Fair.
And he's got hair.
He makes choices. And I can say that as a man with a mohawk, a full-grown man with a mohawk. Listen, I am super into Sebastian Driussi's hair. I think it's like in that emo... Like
that you would like it.
Yeah, that emo vibe, right? Like he could easily comb it down over the front of his eyes mm-hmm. and like listen to My Chemical Romance.
Yeah, I think that's like that's why I'm like, it's fine. Because I want him to do something with it.
Sure. So, make a choice.
Yeah, make a big choice and stick it out.
Got it. what were some of your takeaways from this week's Fit Check?
Okay, a couple things of my takeaways. I think we've seen this shirt on Jossie several times, if not like every week.
Look.
Do you think he has a different shirt?
I think this shirt is his peak Texas shirt.
Sure.
You know, like this is that is the most Austin looking man other than maybe Brad Stuver in this entire set. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's fair. He is wearing the same. I think he and Alex Ring and Brad are all wearing the same pants.
If not the same pants.
Very similar.
Very close.
Like slight variations on color, but they're pretty close. I do want to talk about Brad. I feel bad for Brad because I feel like I give him a lot of crap in this segment lot of the time. And to be fair, it's his fault because he's busy wearing khakis. But this week, he's my favorite fit of the week.
That hoodie is incredible.
The hoodie is amazing.
I don't want it, but I want hoodies that look like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because like I can't.
You don't
want
to match, Brad?
Well, I mean, I would love to. I just think it's too much.
For you?
To wear exactly the same clothes as Brad Stewart.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
My favorite outfit of the week is Brendan Hines-Ike.
Oh, his Justin Timberlake jeans fit?
Canadian tuxedo? This is not a Canadian tuxedo. This is a blue shirt and blue jeans. It is not a denim shirt. It looks very soft and it looks very good. Steph is leaning close into the screen to watch this video.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
But it is not a denim shirt. It is just a button-up shirt.
You're right. Yeah. I looked at it and I thought it was jean on jean on jean.
So in 2010 in Madrid, it was like the peak of fashion to wear monochrome everything head to toe, same color. And that's what this reminds me of is a very European, it's my blue outfit vibe, you know?
Yeah.
And so I really like it.
Nice. I do like Seba's outfit. I think that he looks so comfy.
He
looks like he got up a little late and has to go run an errand. and he's keeping his comfy clothes on.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you thought he was playing too many video games with Guillermo Biru, because both of them looking like they just woke up, you know?
Yeah, but see, I like Biru's because A, it's all black. And I think that anything, if you're black on black on black, like, looks clean. And B, also looks comfy. I love a comfy look.
Yeah. I think it's time we talk about the real winner of this Swoon Tower cycle, though.
Is it? I did want to, before we dive into that, I do want to call out our friend Jessica Luther doing the real work to keep asking the hard questions.
Yes.
Commenting on this Austin FC Fit Check post with, what's in the bags?
What's in the bags?
What's in the bags? Jessica, thank you. Because we all need to know.
That's the question everybody's got.
Everybody.
Everyone wants to know.
Austin FC, what's
in the bags? What's in the bags?
Yes, the real winner of this week is...
Jimmy time!
Jimmy. Like, let's be for real here.
Man.
Best fit check in Austin FC history on a team with Julio Cascante.
It's impressive and accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. It's wonderful. So this is his fit from the Austin FC 2 Open Cup match last week. And it is this, like, it's blue pants. It's his red velvet loafers. It's this light blue matching tunic with purple and black accents. It is stunning. It is gorgeous. It is telling that I shared it to my story and he liked my story 20 minutes before the game started.
Maybe 15. It was pretty close to kickoff. I will say his hair is also on point in this. It's got the stripes on the side. Like, it's a very clean cut, very new. Dude came dressed to play.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't always say that about our second team boys. So
no, our second team boys need to do some work.
Take notes on what Jimmy's doing and do exactly that.
Exactly that. Okay. Now I want to get into our Philadelphia match moods.
Yeah. The thing that jumped out to me the most was Diego Rubio's whole vibe.
Mm-hmm. He was feisty.
Yeah, that man. I think my match moods contributions here are mostly going to be talking about Diego Rubio this season if he keeps it up.
Yeah, but also Owen Wolf.
Yeah.
Like, was it Julio who had to step in between Wolf and someone from Philly? Like, there were a few almost fights that night.
Yeah.
And I really loved it. I love when they get up in each other's business.
I think a lot of that, though, comes from a player like Diego, mm-hmm. who, like, is not afraid immediately at kickoff to start running his mouth. And then as soon as he scores, as soon as he's done kissing Hector's little head, which we will get to in the Selly ratings, he's talking smack again.
Yeah.
He's looking at Philly and, like, running his mouth while the lights are still green in the stadium. Like, that man does not take a minute off from wellhousing, and I am here for it.
I am also very, very much here for it.
The other match mood that I had was that Driussi came back. It was, you know, it was good to see him on the field again.
Yeah. I think the only other thing that I wanted to call out a little bit is during the first half of the match, there was a lot of arms coming from Biru. Like, there was a lot happening. I don't know if it was coming from frustration or being in position or someone else being out of position, like, whatever it was. But, like, he was super, super vocal on the pitch, and we haven't seen that a lot from a lot of our players. Like, we'll see it sometimes from Brad in little moments out of the back, but, like, he was doing a lot of talking. And, like, it's not a comment on whether it's good or bad or the play style, but, like, seeing someone, like, communicate over and over through the whole thing, I thought was an interesting dynamic that we just haven't seen before. So again, like, I don't, you good or bad, like, take your pick, but I just thought it was fun to watch.
Yeah. This is from the Orlando match. But I do think that Biro is starting to play a little bit more freely and kind of express himself a little bit more, which is like,
oh, you
so
mean
fun.
Because he had a what, scorpion kick right out of the goal?
I mean, there's no one else who would do that in the history of Austin FC who would try that at the goal line.
I mean,
because it's insane. Psychotic. It was awesome.
Yes.
But also just generally like the like he plays with so much flair already, you know. I know I have waxed poetic to you on multiple occasions about how he trapped the ball down with his shin guard and like just all these things that a Brazilian player won't think twice about doing that we haven't had before. And
yeah.
It's so fun and exciting.
Yeah.
So, it's those little moments of like joy on the field right now that are kind of keeping me going.
Yeah. Agreed. The other moment of joy that I wanted to chat about is the kids are back. You know, the Philly game was 2 weeks ago. It was the first time I've seen some of our players' kids coming on back out, doing cartwheels, trying to score goals. It's just that really wholesome, beautiful reminder of, you know, their families being there. And also,
I was going to say, not the best kid, though.
Also, I know they're the enemy, but Gazdag's kid, like, I mean, all of a foot and a half tall, running around the where the visitors exit, right around where our seats are, there's that row in the front,
section 108.
Yeah. And he was running around giving high fives down that row. He was signing autographs.
Yeah, this tiny little baby picking up this pen, pretending he's dad, signing like, autographs. Oh, so cute.
And I mean, kudos to all of the folks who were down at the front of 108 who were clearly just like loving it and giving this kid all of the attention in the world. He fell on his butt because he was like running around trying to do high fives and is a baby, so it has no coordination. Like, he fell on his butt so many times and they were all just like cheering him on. It was so cute. He was living his dream. Oh, it was the best. I loved it.
It was pretty good. It wasn't the best. It was no backflip.
Oh boy. All right. Well, let's get into our Sully ratings at that.
The first goal that we had against Philly, because those were the only goals that we scored in this cycle, was Diego Rubio scoring that goal right in the box there. And immediately runs over all ears to the supporter section to hear them singing for him. He's fist bumping. He's screaming. He kisses Hector's head so soft and then immediately starts talking trash again.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a 7.5 out of 10.
You know, it's a 9.5 out of 10 for me.
Oh, boy.
Like the vibe. Diego Rubio.
Yeah. Good vibes. Needs a little bit of that special sauce. You
amplitude.
Know? Yeah. He needs to you know, backflip it up or something. Just give it a little zhuzh.
Yeah. Somebody needs to backflip quick, please.
Please. And then we had John Gallagher's goal celebration, which was really, really sweet. So he did his normal finger to his temple. Ran over to the corner. He got all of his hugs. And then you can see him calling for, like, doing, like, the shape of a ball. He's calling for a ball, trying to track one down so that he can do the pregnant baby celebration.
Yeah, we love the baby celebration. And he points to the baby, like how he normally points to his head, but he pointed to his, like, his fake baby tummy. So good.
Yeah.
I liked this one because he didn't suck his thumb at the same time.
Yes.
That one always makes me weirded out.
Agree.
The pregnant baby one weirds me out, but just pregnant, I'm fine with.
I'm going to give it an 8.5 out of 10.
The restraint of not sucking your thumb, that puts it up there to 9.5 out of 10.
Let's take an ad break.
Swoon Tower Soccer is brought to you by our friends at FBF Law, the official injury lawyers of Austin FC.
FBF is a different kind of personal injury law firm dedicated to community, transparency, and client education. And they have their own podcast called Summary Judgment. Check it out wherever you get your podcasts.
You can go to fvf.law to find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm and why understanding your legal options can dramatically change the outcome of a case. Once again, that's fvf.law.
Our premier sponsor is McGuire Woods Consulting, helping clients in the public affairs space from lobbying at the local, statewide, and federal levels to digital and communications campaigns across the country.
McGuire Woods Consulting has offices in 10 MLS cities, but only advertises on this podcast because it's the home of the two-time reigning Copa Tejas champions, which is the most important trophy in professional sports. Contact our friends at McGuire Woods Consulting at mwcllc.com for more information.
All right, we're going to dive into our social media standouts. And as we get into this section, it's going to be a short one today because a lot of the boys just aren't on social media past couple weeks. And I think that it's clear why. When you see Austin FC post themselves, like just flooded with trolley, why are you smiling if you can never win comments? I think it makes sense that we're not seeing a lot of personal stuff from our players.
Yeah. Once we start winning again, I think the segment will become a little bit more full. But in the meantime, we do have some things that we can talk about, which is great.
Yeah. And in the meantime, if you want to add me to your close friends list, boys, and share all of the stuff that's going on in your lives, I won't snitch. I promise. I won't even say mean things. I will just love absorbing your wholesome, beautiful lives. So that is at Kruggles on Instagram. If you want to go ahead and at Kruggles, close friends list, I got you.
Oh, boy. Okay. you know, we're going to talk about first, we teased it at the top, that the ref strike is now over. We are actually going to get, well, I guess it wasn't a strike. It was a lockout, right? But the boycott of the league is also over, which is great, because 77% of the refs union voted, ratify the tentative agreement. So we're actually going to get real referees back.
Yeah, so we can yell at them.
Yeah.
We can yell at them for being bad and not for being scabs.
Yeah. Just regular ref heckling. Yeah. So that'll be really great. I'm super looking forward to that.
You know what else I'm super looking forward to?
What?
Every time. It's just, that was a bad transition, but it's Julio. Julio got a start for Costa Rica, and they won just this past week. So I know that we were missing him, but I'm really excited to see him flourish, and it was nice.
Yeah, I really loved watching his wife's stories about that match and seeing her and his son in the stadium, in the stands, getting to watch Julio start for the national team. That must be so cool and so special. Yeah. And just really happy for them.
Yeah. I'm also happy for Danny.
Yeah.
Playing with Venezuela last week as well.
Yeah, got to play against Italy. That's pretty big. And then he got the start in the second match. So mm-hmm. That's really exciting and really cool.
Yeah. And it's nice to see, again, that like progression. Like he is doing well enough that he's proving himself there and getting the start and looking at just his focus and his journey this season personally, from what he's shared. I'm excited to hopefully see some of that fire come back to Austin.
Yeah. Speaking of being back in Austin and progressing, CJ and Stephen Cleveland, we're at school.
This is a really sweet post that Austin FC shared out. CJ and Stephen Cleveland stopped by St. Elmo Elementary School, and they got to high five down the halls and chat with the kids and be just...
Good boys.
That's all I wanted to say. But like, you know, it looks like they had a little assembly, and I really love getting to see our boys out in the community and being inspirations for kids.
Yeah, that is one of the things that I think our club does a really good job of, is being connected to the community. And so Anytime that our players or the organization is doing those things, I think it's really important to call out how right those moves are, right? Yeah. That's what makes us the best club in the history of the world.
Yeah. I also wanted to call out a lot of the comments in this post are about Stephen Cleveland from folks in Seattle, about how much they miss him. And they're, you know, excited to see him doing things like this and, you know, how lucky Austin is to have him. So I thought that was nice, too, because we see a lot of, you know, cutting off players as soon as they leave. But if a player like that makes a mark and folks are still following them after they've left your club, I think that speaks to the kind of person that he is. So,
yeah,
we're lucky to have him.
Yep. All right, Steph, I think that's everything. The only question I have for you is, who's the man of your jersey?
It's a great question.
Thank you.
The man of my jersey this week is not just because he's a fashion icon in this one singular moment of time, not just because he has saved this club over and over and over and over and over, but because he's a really great guy. And again, someone who Austin is so lucky to have. We've got a lot of laundry project fundraising and donation drives happening right now, and seeing him so committed to his community and so committed to his club and doing such a good job at both, it's Brad Stuber.
Get you a man in your jersey who can do both, folks. Honestly, like, we would be in trouble without him.
Emotionally and pointsily.
Yep.
All right, well, we'll see you in 2 weeks. We love you.
Goodbye.